Back to My Garden, episode 28.
Welcome to Back to My Garden. Discover your passion for gardening. Here's Dave Ledoux.
This episode of Back to My Garden, sponsored by Coffee Royalty. Can you really lose 5, 10, even 20 pounds or more just by switching your coffee or tea? Find out how to drink it for free at www.backtomygarden.com/coffee. Do you love homegrown tomatoes? Me too. Free report reveals the 5 dirt cheap tools I use to grow 22 types of heirloom tomatoes, including my secret soil booster. Download your copy for free today at www.backtomygarden.com/free report. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world when you listen to this. I'm Dave Ledoux, and welcome to another edition of Back to My Garden. Today, we're just going down the highway, right in my own backyard, no more than 2 hours away. This gentleman is an award-winning garden journalist. He is a speaker. He's an author of No Guff Vegetable Gardening and Grow Figs Where You Think You Can't. He's a dad to 3 young future gardeners, and he's an active blogger. We're going to be talking to him about all things gardening today. I want to welcome to the show Mr. Stephen Biggs. Stephen, welcome to Back to My Garden.
Thanks, Dave.
I've been looking very much forward to chatting with you this afternoon, and I know my listeners want to hear a little bit about your story. Stephen, can you take a minute or two and just tell us a little bit about your background and how you happened to find out about gardening?
Sure. Well, parents and grandparents were all avid gardeners, so there wasn't really any other way. I remember gardening with my parents when I was a kid. I remember planting tomato seeds with my grandfather, who years before had been a market gardener, and I remember helping my Nana work on her garden when she was alone and needed a bit of help. So gardening came naturally.
Fantastic. So you grew up with it, and like many of us, myself included, you had parents and grandparents who were gardeners. And then there's always a gap, and then you kind of find it as an adult. Can you remember your first garden as an adult? What did you decide to plant? And what was it like for you emotionally? Was there fear and trepidation, or did you jump in with both feet?
No. I guess I always was able to steal a corner of my parents' yard. They were pretty good that way. But once I'd left home, I got an allotment garden, and I grew lots of veggies. And no, I don't remember any fear or trepidation. I do remember that somebody stole my potato crop, which really ticked me off. But all in all, it was a good experience. Gardening's such a good community thing, so I remember this nice feeling of camaraderie when I'd bump into other gardeners at the community garden plot.
Excellent. Was that in Toronto?
No, that was in Guelph. I took horticulture in Guelph.
Yes, I was reading your bio, and I'm actually dating a college woman. My wife is going to U of Guelph in September to do her master gardening course.
Ah, okay. Well, it's the place.
It is the place, yeah. And what an age we live in now with the internet. It's all online, long-distance learning.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Mm. Now, I found out about you, Stephen, through a chapter you wrote in Nikki Jabour's book. Mm. And my wife got the book, and she ran out and bought a fig tree. You have become kind of a, I don't know, celebrity, but you're an expert on figs, or you know a lot about them.
Yeah,
you know. How did this happen?
Dave, I never set out to be the fig guy. And the way it happened was that when I give gardening talks, a lot of them about growing vegetables, and sometimes I'd make a comment about my fig trees, and I found that in a whole talk about veggies, if I made one comment about figs, then half of the questions at the end of my talk seemed to be about figs. And for whatever reason, figs really intrigue people. And so then I decided, well, I'd better have a talk about figs. And that was a hit. And then, of course, that led to a book. So now I have a bit of a reputation as a fig pig. I call myself a fig pig. And I'm enjoying it. It's such a fun hobby.
This is excellent. I have you on the show, and my wife bought a fig because of the book. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to go out and buy Grow Figs Where You Think You Can't. Is that on Amazon or just Timber Press?
No, it's on my website for the book. So it's grow-figs.com.
Grow-figs.com. Now, if you're driving in your car, keep both hands on the wheel. I'll put the links in the show notes. Grow-figs.com. Now, the 2 weeks removed from the nursery, it's still in the pot from the nursery because we don't know quite what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little over 2 feet tall. It looks real happy and strong. It's a hardy fig.
That's a good one to start with.
Mm-hmm. First one. Basic. Treat me like a beginner, because I am. Get a big pot?
Yeah, and, you know, even backing up a little bit more. So the big thing about figs in our northern climate, where people think they're not hardy, the big thing to know is that figs go dormant, and when they're dormant, they can freeze. So they can't take the extreme cold that you or I get here, but they can freeze. And so that means we can put them in a cold cupboard or put them in a garage, or we can mulch them and they'll probably survive. So that's the big thing about figs. So you can grow them in a pot and put them in somewhere where they can be dormant, cool and dark over the winter. Or if you plant it in the ground, then you can bend it over and mulch it and overwinter it that way.
Okay, my initial plan is to move it into the tool shed. It'll be out of all the elements, but it's not heated, so It sounds perfect. Okay.
And I should add that when I talk about putting it in the garage, if you have an attached garage, the temperature fluctuations tend not to be as severe as a detached garage. So just be mindful of keeping those extremes to a minimum. Okay. So here in Toronto, for example, mine go in my garage, but I threw some insulation in there, and that minimizes the temperature fluctuations. And then I have an old baseboard heater that kicks in only on those coldest of nights when it's dropping down to minus 20. Then I turn that on low. It can still freeze in there, but it just doesn't get as cold.
For my American friends, minus 20 Celsius and minus 20 Fahrenheit are about the same. So that is rather cold. And I think you just saved my fig, Stephen. I'm going to move it from the tool shed to my insulated garage where it never freezes. It's always like 2 degrees. So
perfect. That's perfect.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how many years before I start to see fruit on it?
You might see fruit this year. And the thing about figs is they're usually reproduced by cuttings. So that plant thinks it's mature. Physiologically, it thinks it's mature. When you have a small plant like that, you probably don't want it to fruit right away because you want the energy to grow, to go into growing the plant to a bigger size. So typically the first year or two, I'll pick off any little figs, force the plant to grow vegetatively, and then once it gets to roughly the size and shape I want, then I'll let it fruit. But, you know, if you're very eager to taste that fig year one, why not? You can still let it fruit.
Brilliant. And there's our fig lesson, folks. Now make sure you head over to Stephen's site at grow-figs.com. Pick up that book. I know I will be. I want to change gears on you a little bit, Stephen.
Mm-hmm.
You speak on gardening. You write on gardening. I mean, heck, let's face it, you're considered an expert. And as an expert, everything has gone perfect for you from the day you planted your first seed. You've never had any problems in the garden. Or at least that's what the beginners think, right? Do you have what I call a catastrophic oopsie, where something went horrendously wrong and now you can look back and smile and tell it in a humorous way?
Oh, yeah. And lots of mistakes. And I mentioned in the beginning how I remember planting tomato seeds with my grandfather. I also remember coming back and finding all of those seeds flopped over and wilted because we forgot to water them. So there's lots of oopsies. I remember making my first water garden. And we put crayfish in there thinking it would be fun to watch crayfish. Well, that attracted every raccoon in Toronto, I think, because they happen to like eating crayfish. So, yeah, just because I write about it doesn't mean I don't do silly things in the garden and make mistakes.
You've won some fans now because we all relate to mistakes. I'm nodding with the crayfish one. I had that happen to me, too.
I'm not the only one, then. Good.
Yeah. Well, and again, this one won't mean much to the international listeners, but I live 3 hours north of Toronto near Owen Sound. And we had a little pond with some crayfish in it. And I look out the window and three raccoons are swimming in my pond and eating the crayfish. So I totally relate to that. because of the climate, I want to ask you a little bit. We had that killing ice storm in December. And I have a lot, you know, Maine had it and big parts of the Northeast and the States. When you come to springtime after a big killing winter like that, what was it like for you this year? Did you have any damage?
Yeah, we had some limbs down on the trees, and so I had some cleanup to do. I bought a chainsaw for the first time this spring because there was so much cleaning up to do. But in the grand scheme of things, it was okay. No branches hit the house or the garage, and it's all cleaned up, and you know we're in full gardening mode now.
Excellent. I would imagine because of your experience, a lot of your friends and family refer to you as Dr. Stephen Biggs, the garden expert. But what does gardening mean to you now? Is it something just physical, or do you do it for the vegetables or for the love? What do you get from gardening now after all this time spent in the garden?
Well, first of all, I never get Dr. Steve, but I do have a cousin who calls me Cousin Chlorophyll. I think the garden is a great creative outlet. I love planning it. And, for example, last year we did a bit of work on the house and I looked at the garden and I thought, well, this means I'm going to change the layout of the garden so it ties in with the design in the house a bit. Last week I built a dry stone wall. I've been reading about how to work with mortarless stone walls, and so I finally got around to that. So all of this, to me, it's a creative outlet. So I find that very rewarding. Above and beyond just eating some of the veggies or picking flowers. I just love that creative outlet.
Brilliant. Fantastic. You have so many projects on the go. What is your garden like this season?
Well, yes, there's a couple of themes in my garden. I like things I can eat. So I do grow flowers, but there's lots of root and veggies in there, and of course figs, plums, and apples, and lots of veggies. So things I can eat are a big thing. And I find the other theme in my garden this year and any year is that I'm a little bit more interested in the form of the garden than individual plant names. Some people really love knowing the names of every plant, maybe collecting plants, and I'm terrible at that. When it came to Latin plant names, I've always been hopeless. I don't know if that'll ever change. So I'm not very good at that. When people come over and they'll say, oh, what's this plant? And I'll say, oh, gosh, I can't think of that name. But, you know, I got it from such and such a place. So I tend to be more interested in the form. What's the shape of the bed? Where does the pathway go? How do the shapes tie in with each other? That's what my garden is like.
Brilliant. Okay, let me ask you about it then. Is there anything you're growing this year that's either surprising you or frustrating you?
Surprising me or frustrating me? Well, you know, I can tell you something that's really satisfying me. That's the first thing that's coming to mind, Dave, is I grew some sweet peas. It's a variety called High Scent. And I think it's surprising in that it just evokes such a strong memory of a trip. I was in England a half dozen years ago with one of my dad's cousins, and she had this variety of sweet pea called High Scent. And so I finally tracked down some seeds for that, and I grew it this year. And the minute I smelt it, it transported me right back to Jill's yard, and I could picture being there. So that's been a very pleasant surprise.
And that's High Scent.
High Scent.
Great name.
And it's so, if you know sweet peas, it's just a cut flower. It's not an edible pea. It's a cut flower. And they're known for the scent. There's also a wide variety of colors, but some of the newer varieties don't have the same scent as the old ones. So this is just a fairly plain white flower with purplish edges. But the scent is unsurpassed. High Scent. I really recommend it.
Nice. Good, good, good. Let's take a minute to thank our sponsors and then come back and play five quick questions. Attention, gardeners. Do you love perennial flowers? Get a free online catalog and 10% off your first order of bulbs at Bloomin' Bulbs. I set up a link just for podcast listeners. Go to www.backtomygarden.com/bulb for your special bonus. Are you concerned about toxic chemicals, GMOs, and frankenfood? Don't panic, grow organic. Discover my new resource for organic gardening. Go to www.backtomygarden.com/myorganic. Well, it's the time in the show when we get to play my favorite part. It's called Five Quick Questions. This is your chance to share some wisdom and experience resources with beginning gardeners. Are you ready to play?
I'm set.
Awesome.
Fire ahead.
Number one, in your opinion, what do you think stops most people from trying gardening?
To me, it's a pretty simple answer. It's fear. And I say that because I used to do garden consulting, and I have customers who were just afraid to start gardening. They didn't really know where to begin, but all they knew was that they had seen all of these magazines with picture-perfect gardens in them, and I think that made them afraid to try because they didn't think they could ever achieve that. So fear, that's what stops most people from gardening.
If somebody's afraid, do you think they should just read a book on it or just get out and do it? Like, how do you get that beginner to overcome that fear?
Yeah, well, dig in. Just dig in and start gardening.
That's brilliant advice, folks who are listening. If you have friends and family members that look at you like, oh, I'd love to do what you do. Action cures fear.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Even if you're just growing weeds the first season. Now, you've gone to school for this. You've done it most of your life. You've studied from some master gardeners. Stephen, what is the single best piece of gardening advice that you've ever personally received?
Best advice? Well, Dave, I think the best advice, and it wasn't even received in the context of gardening. I was trying to decide whether to continue living in Montreal or move back to Toronto. And I remember speaking to a family friend who listened to me hum and haw through the positive and negative both ways and said to me, you'll know what's right, and said nothing more. And I think that applies to gardening. You'll know what's right. You have to think about things, observe things, and maybe just try again. That's really what gardening's all about. You don't have to be right the first time.
Ooh, there's the quote of the week, folks. You don't have to be right the first time. Stephen, my wife's grinning at me. We have a raised bed that the tomatoes are super angry. Everything's yellow and brown and dying. Mm-hmm. So today we did a chemistry test on it to test the soil.
Yeah.
And we had tested that in, beginning of March. The yard was frozen. But remember when we got that warm spring in the beginning? So we kind of chipped out some soil and did the test, and it didn't look too bad. Today we tested it. The pH is 8. And the nitrogen is 0. Didn't even register. So we learned a valuable lesson about when not to test the garden.
Live and learn, right?
Exactly. Some of our tomatoes have 1 tomato on them. And I'm thinking, well, if I had a pH of 8, I wouldn't want to grow tomatoes either.
I think one good thing about kitchen gardening, fruit and vegetable gardening, that I always tell people, don't set out growing food thinking that you'll be self-sufficient. Set out growing food so that when you get beautiful food at the farmer's market, you can appreciate what goes into it.
Ooh, there's the wisdom, folks. Brilliant. Now, if you were my teacher 30 years ago, Stephen, I'd have to go to the library and check out a book and hope that the book had the wisdom. Now, the internet.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to your websites, can you think of two maybe favorite websites that you could recommend to a new gardener?
Yeah, well, I should first start, Dave, by saying I don't read blogs much, so I'm not too helpful that way.
Okay.
But I do have a couple of websites that I think are worth checking out. Now, the first is going to be fig-related.
Mm-hmm.
And I share this one because I love figs, but even for people who aren't interested in figs, the neat thing about this is it shows how people have taken up this hobby of growing figs, and it could be any plant, right? But they've formed this community, they're sharing information, there's this great forum, and they're having lots of fun. Gardening should be about fun. So the first website is figsforfun.com. It's the word figs with an S, the number four, fun, F-U-N.com.
If you're jogging and listening to this on your iPhone, don't worry. I'll put the links in the website notes. Figsforfun.com.
Yeah.
That's great.
Okay. Fun is so important in gardening. It should be fun.
Good, good, good.
Here's another one.
Mm-hmm.
Gardenmaking.com. Now this, for people who don't know it, there's a great print magazine called Garden Making. What I love about it is that it's a how-to magazine. So I talked earlier about a lot of magazines have all these picture-perfect gardens, and sometimes there's not a lot of how-to information. This is very much a how-to magazine. And so the website I've just given you is the companion website. They have some of the articles up there, and they have blogs. And what I like about this sort of website, though, is that it's curated. So blogs are nice. You can get lots of good ideas. But I think when it comes to thinking about where to find information, think about also going places where the information is curated. So there's somebody in the background asking the writer all sorts of questions. So do you mean this or do you mean this? Oh, is that right? Well, why is that the case? And so that's why I like some of this traditional magazine type format.
Fantastic. I'm a big reader. I get most of my gardening knowledge from reading. And now you've literally written the book on figs, Grow Figs Where You Think You Can't.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a book that you would recommend to somebody just learning gardening that has been a staple maybe in your library or a fond book that you like?
Yeah, well, I'm going to recommend Nikki Jabor's book, The Groundbreaking Food Gardens. And you mentioned it earlier. And the reason that I'm recommending this one is there's two things about it that I think are important. First of all, it's fun. So back to that idea, gardening should be fun, not intimidating. And some gardening books, I think, take themselves too seriously. But this one is fun, first thing. And the other thing is it's bite-sized chunks. So you have in that book, I think it's 73 plans. I can't remember the number. But there's a bunch of them. So that information is broken down into bite-sized chunks. So people can just take one thing and run with it.
I want to echo Stephen's comments. Nikki's book is brilliant because it's not a theoretical textbook. It's plans and drawings and diagrams and actionable content. Like, we went out, we bought a fig tree from the book, you know. Oh, incidentally.
That's great.
What am I going to do with the fruit from one tree? Roughly in terms of volume, how much do you get from one of your trees?
Yeah, so how much fruit you'll get from one tree will depend, first of all, on the size of the tree and the variety. Now, the size of the tree will depend on what size pot you give it or if you put it in the garden. So I've always grown mine, Dave, in relatively small pots. I've picked a 14-inch pot.
Mm-hmm.
because I was thinking, so what weight of tree and pot is reasonable for me to carry indoors and not put my back out every fall? So I picked this 14-inch pot, which works well. But a couple years ago, someone gave me two figs in half barrels. And I tell you, they're beautiful. But it took three of us to get them on the truck. Anyway, I mention all this because the ones in half barrels are, of course, about three times the size of all my other trees. And so three times as many figs. So coming back to your question, how many figs will you get per tree depends on the variety, depends how you're growing it, but very much it depends on how big you let that tree become.
Hmm. You know, it's kind of really cool interviewing you because it's like learning hockey from Wayne Gretzky or, you know, martial arts from George St. Pierre. You're the fig guy. And I know you didn't set out to be that, but on the internet, you are highly referenced and talked about.
Well, that's good to hear. I hope I inspire a couple of other people to try figs or to try something that's fun in gardening.
I'm almost saying this with a little bit of tongue in cheek here for question number five, Stephen, is what's the number one thing every gardener should try to grow next year?
Yeah.
If you had an answer other than figs, what would it be?
Yeah, so I'll stay away from figs because that's just too obvious. Let's just say this, an edible, but I won't say what edible because really I'm a firm believer in growing something that will be satisfying. And what's going to be satisfying might be different for everybody. So, for example, I happen to like Swiss chard. Well, I know some people detest it. So I don't think I can give an edible that's right for everybody. So pick something you like. Pick something that really excites you. Maybe something that has a little bit of a novelty factor and grow that.
Nice. I'm nodding and smiling. I'm in agreement. Good, good, good. For those of you listening at home, make sure you follow Stephen on Twitter at NoGuffSteve. Go to his website, share his content on social media. He's got some great information at www.stephenbiggs.ca. And pick up his books, No Guff Vegetable Gardening, and Grow Figs Where You Think You Can't, grow-figs.com. Stephen, our time has flown by. You're a fascinating guest. I want to give you the last word on the show today. Do you have a pearl of wisdom or a note of encouragement for our gardeners on their gardening adventure?
Be creative. Have fun. I've had so much fun gardening. And, for example, I took out my driveway one year and I planted it all with angels' trumpets with these Brugmansias. And I say this, I guess what I'm saying, be creative. Don't think anything is silly. Just go with your gut. I did what could have been a silly thing to some people. I took out my driveway. I made this beautiful plantation of Brugmansias. And I had more fun memories. I had more guests come over and enjoy that than I could ever have hoped for. So I think gardening gives us that opportunity to do these amazing things and meet people. And yeah, does that make sense?
Wow, tremendous. That is fantastic advice. Were your neighbors, did they come in and think it was great?
They did. I think they thought I was strange at first, but they thought I was great afterwards.
It's a living piece of art. Fantastic. Stephen, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.